Yeah, let's do it.
Shall I talk like that the whole time?
No.
Let's not do that. Hello, welcome to Leaving Erinsborough, the Neighbours Rewatch podcast from the very, very, very beginning. I'm Sarah Gibbs. I'm a writer, at least on paper, or not on paper. I'm so sad right now.
Hieroglyphics mainly, you know, it's, yeah. It's very, very contemporary.
I enjoy Neighbours so much that I have dedicated my life to this utterly bananas project. And very exciting news this week, we have Rachel back. Woo-hoo. Who are you, Rachel?
I'm very happy to be back, and I have binged all the episodes I've missed, as well as the ones for this one, and I listened to the last lovely recording with Ricky Orr, who did a great job of keeping my seat warm, so thank you very much for that.
Well done, Ricky. Yeah, we love you.
It's really fab. I should say I'm a comedian and comedy writer as well, but at the moment I'm mainly just someone who watches Neighbours, certainly the last 48 hours, both modern and ancient.
Me too. That's all I've got going for me right now. I'm just like clinging to Neighbours like a life raft.
I'm desperate to chat to you about like new Neighbours, but I feel like we have to wait 37 years or whatever it is, and then we can get onto it properly.
Yeah, let's not spoil it for everyone. there's so much to talk about with old Neighbours because everyone is terrible. Oh, before we get started, this is why everything's going wrong in my life. I have a book out this week.
Please do buy and read Sarah's book, because I have, and it was excellent.
Thank you very much, Rachel. It is still called Eight Bright Lights. It's about three Jewish women over the 8 days of Hanukkah. And you don't have to be Jewish to enjoy it. In fact, you might even learn something new.
I'd say if you like a sort of cozy, funny Christmas film on a Sunday afternoon with a bit of popcorn, maybe some chocolate, that sort of vibe, this is quite a nice book for you, whether you're Jewish or not.
Yeah, thank you. One of my friends describes it as like Love Actually without all the shitty men. This podcast is not about my book. This is about 1986 Neighbours at this point. And we left off last fortnight with Bradley getting the spanking of a lifetime from Jack Lasseter.
And I have that to tell you, quickly. Jack really looked like he was enjoying it to me. He looked like brilliance. I love the opportunity to smack up a kid.
Yeah, he really did. He's like, this is Jack's time to shine.
And also is, if ever there was a moment for social services to get involved with Andrea, and heaven knows, there have been a lot of moments. I mean, yeah. I'd say saying to her son immediately after he's been beaten to a pulp by her elderly and yet wiry and strong partner, Bradley, darling, it's all right. It's not all right. It's not all right. None of it was all right. The gaslighting is horrendous. And then Jack's response is, come on, I wasn't even trying. Well, I'd love to see if you were trying. What would have happened if you were, like, what? He turned inside out? What would have happened? Anyway,
he was asking for it. You were asking for it, Bradley. Well, yeah. You were winding him up. I'd like to say, you referred to Jack Lasseter as her partner. This was their first date.
Yeah, but they both knew that this was like, you know, she works for him. And also, she's sort of quite a predatory woman. I think that's fair to say. And he's... Yeah. What's the thing they say, Australians? A larrigan? A lannigan?
Larrikin?
Larrikin, whatever. Yeah. You know, a sort of, for someone who's like amazing in business, he's a bit of a pull the wool over lots of women's eyes. You know, he leads people on.
He does.
And he's up for a bit of shenanigans with Andrea. There's no, like, once you're working together and you decide to go on a date, there's no, you know, you're crossing a line, aren't you?
And he's her superior. So like, she's kind of stuck whether she likes him or not.
And also, if on your first date you beat up your partner's of that night, your date's child, I mean, what's happening on the second date, really? Like, where does this go?
Yeah, smash their car? Exactly what I was gonna say. Like, you know, you hear people say, and this is absolutely right, of domestic abuse victims, they go, why did you get involved with him? And well, he didn't hit me on the first date. This man did some hitting on the first
date. On the first date of a child. I mean, yeah. Even if it's Bradley, I quite like Bradley these days. When do you remember, I do too. When he first arrived, honestly, I would have done a Jack Lasseter. But now, I'm sort of, he's just like a little whiny kid who's had a hard life.
Yeah, I love Bradley. I think Bradley gets a really rough run of it. And it's kind of open season on Bradley this fortnight.
I'm going to posit to you that Bradley is the Esau of Ramsay Street. And if anyone wants to look at their Old Testament and find out, Esau, as in Jacob, and he's given a very, very hard time for just being himself, biblically speaking. So that's my that's why you have me here for the religious content.
the religious content we're all here for.
Absolutely. I'm happy to discuss that further if anyone's interested. I'm pretty sure that I was on another podcast, Worst Foot Forwards, and I think that Esau was my person, my most misunderstood person of the Bible, for that.
Was he in the like the Torah portion this week or something?
Coming up 2 weeks time.
Okay. You so he's, you got Esau on the mind.
Well, haven't we all always? I mean, isn't that a thing?
It is for me. I wake up thinking about him. It's all... Yeah. So yeah, it's bad. It's very, very bad. It's a red flag when your date beats up your child on the first date.
Yeah.
And then when your mum is like, well, you asked for it and I'm going to keep dating him. I don't think Bradley is safe.
No.
And well, what's Des doing? He was mad about it for like a second and then he was like, eh.
Well, he is the most dishwatery, dishclothy chocolate teapot, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely useless. Speaking of Des, we finally get the Des and Daphne reunion. It's very annoying. Des runs over Daphne and then sexually assaults her.
Yeah, there's a lot of I'm just trying to put how find how is it, because I have got 4 pages of notes for this little cluster. Des does the worst kiss ever, I'd say, on Daphne. It was, I'm trying to think of one I hate more. I think maybe any that Colin Firth does in any of the rom-coms, which seem to involve some kind of suction equipment. Yeah, I put something about how he thought he was doing an officer and a gentleman. Pretty much throughout this every time. Oh yeah, I put Des, officer and a gentleman, blur.
Well, the fact that you described it as him doing a kiss on Daphne.
Yeah, well, that was it. It was, I mean, yes, they've been doing this whole dance around each other and whatever. Like, she obviously does like him, but still, consent, guys, that's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't mean, even if she does like him and even if she does secretly want to be with him, that doesn't mean you can force her to kiss you.
No. Maybe he's been chatting to Scott too much.
Yes, take your advice from a rapey teenager. Good. Excellent. Then for some reason he thinks that the iron is hot because he sexually assaulted Daphne, strong arms her into dinner, and this annoyingly works. Mm. So she's into it, which is I'll get into it later when another thing happens that she is then into, which I'm appalled about. Yeah. But just as they're about to make out, Zoe arrives very upset. And we'll come back to Zoe's storyline.
Yeah.
But Des is just awful to his crying friend Zoe because she's interrupted his sexy time with Daphne.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he is awful. But also, on top of that, he causes, I know we haven't discussed the business class thing yet, but he causes Daphne to miss 2 business classes, and that has really annoyed me.
Yeah, she's a new business owner. She needs them more than anyone.
Completely. And if you love someone, you don't stop them going to what seems to be a run by a tragic person business class.
If you love someone, let them go to business class.
Completely. If there's one lesson I want you to take away from this podcast.
But she does need those business classes. Wasn't it only like 2 months ago that she realised that the key to her business staying open was more customers.
Yeah, and also, if we're to avoid any future, like, pancake competitions.
Non-compliant pancake competitions.
I know. There you go. So send her to business class, Des, if you love her. You know, there's that famous expression, isn't there? If you love someone, send them to business class. There you go. Yeah.
There you go. Jack Lasseter, somewhere in here, goes to dinner at the Ramseys for what is clearly a date. And he knows it's a date. But then when Tom is like, dude, stop talking about Andrea the whole time, he's like, oh, I didn't realize I was leading her on. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. You're meant to be like a wise old tree. You know what's happening. You don't get to suddenly not be able to read people and be completely oblivious. I do not accept this. No.
No. Hideous.
But Tom goes out of his way to humiliate Madge. Jack Lasseter goes even further out of his way to humiliate her. At least she got a bottle of French champagne out of it.
Well, thank goodness. It was all, yeah, it was very cringe, that whole dinner. It was very cringe. It's like if your parents invite someone over who's got a son your age. That was the vibe. Yeah.
It was. My notes are quite sparse this fortnight because I wrote them afterwards. Sometimes I write as I go and then they're really elaborate and the podcast goes on for 4 hours. And sometimes I'm tired and I just write up what I remember afterwards. So these are the broad beats. And I think, Rachel, you probably have more detail than me. But
well, my detail is stuff like, why is Tom's fringe so higgledy-piggledy? Was there something that the makeup team didn't notice? Like, or is that part of his character? And I did mean to look up the actor online and see if he generally has a higgledy-piggledy fringe or whether that's something they put in for the character of Tom. I was quite distracted by the fringe, if I'm honest. It's higgledy-piggledy.
He does seem like someone who would put a colander on his own head and just cut around it.
Completely. And also, he quite often dresses like a chameleon, as in he's wearing the same colour as whatever the walls are in the room. So, yeah, just if you can spot him, then that's amazing. That's why he's so loud, actually, is my theory. I've never really thought about this till now, but bear with me, that he's loud and obnoxious because otherwise you won't spot him like a predator. But he might be the only non-predator in the whole of Ramsey Street, having said that. But yeah, he blends his blazers to the wallpaper. That's the vibe of Tom.
I don't know, give him time. There's still time for him to become a predator.
Yeah, true. Well, he's not engaged to anyone yet. He's been there for minutes. What's wrong?
Give it a few episodes. He'll be married to Tragic Jean.
Oh, Tragic Jean.
So after much backing and forthing and bugging Daphne while she's trying to work and generally making a nuisance of himself, Des grabs Daphne, picks her up like a caveman, and carries her home over his shoulder while she screams and hits him and says, put me down. And plinky plonky happy music plays to indicate that we should be all right as the audience with the situation. And onlookers laugh approvingly and lightheartedly, ho, 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 what japes, as she screams and says, for the love of God, put me down, I hate you, etc. And
onlookers, apart from Mrs. Mangle, she's not impressed. But also, can I reiterate here, Des, officer and a gentleman, blur.
Yeah. It's only officer and a gentleman if everyone's into it.
Yeah, completely. No one's into it.
No. And I feel like if you edited this scene with different music and a different vibe, this would be really dark. Like, this is a woman being kidnapped in broad daylight and no one comes to her aid when she's screaming for help.
No, completely. Hideous.
It's very disturbing.
It is disturbing, but it's also very on brand for 1986 Neighbours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What's more disturbing is that it works.
Mm. And then there's like the worst proposal ever. Because he's got her kind of trapped in a sort of pincer movement. And then it's like, just say yes, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. Just say yes. What is it? I'm not going to tell you. Just say yes.
That's the only way he can get someone to marry him.
How very romantic.
Pick a hand and he had. Surprise, we're engaged.
Yeah. Well, you know, the clock's ticking. And she hasn't been engaged for a week or two now. So, yeah, about time.
Yeah.
About time.
You're right. That is a long time between engagements for Daphne.
No.
And literally, they have been back together 5 seconds. Mm. That's got to be a record.
Well, you know, when you know, you know.
Last time they got engaged before they'd even kissed, didn't they?
Well,
they've kissed briefly.
But, you know, when, well, they, I think there is something about when people have been dancing around each other, then they sort of know that they're into it. But the engagement thing, I mean, that's just a Ramsey Street thing, though, isn't it? It's Ramsey Street and ultra-Orthodox Jews. Like, that's who gets engaged after 5 minutes. I'm super Jewy today. I think there's quite a lot of stress in my life, and it's bringing it all out. But I do think, like, Bradley's reaction to the engagement, you know, his concern about what that means for Des not loving him anymore, and maybe they'll have their own children and he won't have time for him anymore. And I thought Des was actually very sweet. This is where he sort of redeems himself for me a tiny bit, is the way that he is with Bradley, because somehow, for unfathomable reasons, he does seem to really care and, you know, care for and love this little boy. And want to make his life a bit better. But, you know, it's like, I love you, don't worry, nothing will change, but you can go and live in my mum's unit.
Yeah.
One of two people who have a unit in this batch of episodes, I might add. So, yeah, I feel Bradley is the unsung hero of Neighbours. Bradley and Lenny are the best actors.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. They completely are.
Fight me, anyone who's listening who doesn't agree.
I mean, you've got Charlene on your side, so I wouldn't pick on you.
No, absolutely not. She's like me, scrappy. Like,
she's really scrappy.
Yeah. You know, I'm when I used to fight with my sister, we used to, honestly, it was like proper physical fighting and injury causing fighting, definitely. And this is like a slight diversion, but why not? I remember once, but also because we both were quite sort of sly about it. And the more my mum wanted us to be best friends, the more we wanted to kill each other. And we were on holiday once and we had like a proper cat fight, her and I, and she scratched in my eye. Like, there was red in my eye, or my iris, is it? No, what's the white bit? Whatever the white bit is. And I then pretended to her that I had gone blind and it was her fault.
Oh my God.
So that level of fighting. So yeah, I mean, I think me and Charlene could take on anybody.
Pretty much. I like how we've been back, what, 5 minutes and you've already started a gang.
You could be in our gang. You can like take, you could take the minutes.
You don't want me in your gang. I'm worse than useless. I'm like, I surrender. I'll tell you all that weak points. I'm scared. Please don't hurt me. I'm puny and weak and helpless. I think Des says all the right things to Bradley in the moment, but then does ship him off immediately to his mother's unit.
His mother's unit.
So he has no intention of continuing to live with Bradley or parent him.
Well, he'll probably take him out to McDonald's on Sunday afternoon. Did McDonald's exist then? No, he'll have to take him to Harold's. What was Daphne's cafe called? I'm just having like a mental block.
What is Daphne's cafe called? Please let us know. We had someone in our Facebook group, Lawrence, find out. I won't say which of the actors, but we were querying what happened to one of the actors who is no longer active. And clearly they don't want to be found, so we won't say. But they managed to find who they are, where they are, what they're doing now, current picture.
Yeah.
It was very, very impressive sleuthing. Thank you, Lawrence.
A lot smilier than you might expect.
Indeed. I'm glad he's happy.
Yeah.
Good.
Deserves a bit of happiness. And that's all Indeed. I'm going to say on the subject. But Bradley is so damaged, really, by this whole situation with Daphne and Des getting together, that he's all in for his mum and Jack Lassiter, evil Jack, to get engaged, because that's how these things work. We'll come on to, there's three engagements that happen over this.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in Jim's storyline.
But Bradley actually wants her, like, he has like a man-to-man talk with Jack Lassiter for to create what is then the absolute worst engagement. If you thought Des and Daphne's engagement was bad, Jack and Andrea's, which is like, yeah, we don't love each other, but, you know, I want to beat up your child, but that seems as good a reason as any to get married.
It's absolutely horrifying. He proposes to Andrea after one date in which he brutally spanked her child. She says she doesn't love him, but she basically does like his money quite a lot. He says, that's fine, don't worry about it, I'll settle for you liking me. And I'm guessing this is going to be Bradley's exit storyline, and Bradley is going to be shipped off to live with this horrible old man who, like, quite horrifically beat him up the first time they encountered each other, and they're now going to be living together. What, is he going to change? No.
Mm. No. Sad.
What a horrible future for Bradley. I'm so upset about it.
I would liberate Bradley in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Someone take Bradley into protective care. It's not right.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack, when he goes for dinner with Tom and Madge, he talks about Andrea the whole time. That was the thing I wrote down that I wanted to say.
Yes.
Like, you know, and it reminded me of, okay, so when I was a teenager, I had like a group of friends, and there was this guy in our group of friends, and this is like looking back with my hindsight, and he was like a serial monogamist where he sort of dated around all the girls, but he would like be going out with someone, and then towards the, like, it would be very happy for a period of time, I know 3 months or whatever, and then he would start talking quite a lot about one of the other girls, and that was your clue that he was getting ready to move on. I was about to say shed his skin, but that's a lot, because I've been watching a lot of Facebook reels recently, because there's been a lot going on that I don't want to pay attention to, and one of the things I've been watching is this guy who breeds snakes, so that's one thing. It really, I've been watching mainly person who breeds snakes, people who clean carpets, and also either squeezing of spots or cutting of ingrown toenails, because you really can't think about other stuff when you're watching those. But anyway, snake breeders, really fascinating. Also occasional spiders. Anyway, what was I talking about now?
A guy.
Oh yeah, this guy, the serial guy. So I remember that he was dating my friend, and then I dated him, which was a terrible idea in every possible respect. And then at some point, when I was trying to work out how to get myself out of this scenario, because I wasn't very good at the whole relationship thing, I was 16 and I didn't really know how to dump somebody, especially if they were like cool and popular. So I just tried to be disinterested, and then eventually he dumped me, and I was so happy, which he found quite disturbing, because I think he was expecting me to be a bit upset, and I was like, amazing. But he started talking for the last week or so about another of our friends, and then they went on to date each other, and then it turned out, like, we found later the girls between us, that was the big pattern. And I feel like going over to Madge, the Wonder Chef, who magically materializes food in a moment, that should be her tagline. So, and just talking about another woman is very poor form. But particularly, I wrote down what he loves about Andrea. She's really brought in business. That's her USP.
Oh God!
So there they are with romantic. Their French champagne. What's the big deal about Andrea? She really brought in business. And by the way, there's like two dinners going on at the same time. I know we're not talking about the Robinsons now, but just to say that there's like in between that dinner party, there's like a meanwhile that another dinner, not a dinner party, but at the Robinson house having dinner. And there's a whole conversation about blackberry pie. Like blackberry pie. Is blackberry pie a thing on its own? Just blackberries?
Let us know in the Facebook group. Is blackberry pie on its own a thing? Is this an Australian delicacy?
I don't know. I've never heard of like blackberry pie on its own. As opposed to blackberry and Anna, because blackberry would just be mush. Anyway,
I might have a soggy bottom.
Do it. I've made soups constantly since the 7th of October, pretty much. That's been my default setting.
I've been building a dollhouse to cope with my anxiety. Yeah. And it's utterly, there's no other word. I'm sorry, it's mental health shaming. Unhinged. It's unhinged.
But it's cool, your dollhouse.
Is it?
Well, it will be.
I keep changing my mind about what I'm doing. So I built a whole disco wall and then decided it doesn't go in the house. I'm going to build an outdoor disco area. Now this thing's going to take over the whole living room. My poor husband's like, okay, whatever makes you happy, dear. Just please stop crying all the time.
Yeah. I mean, and if in doubt, then I can definitely send you links to some reels of people who breed snakes and or wash carpets. Honestly, the rug cleaning videos, I'm just recommending them to everyone. They're so therapeutic. They're like people who've had, imagine, like, what's her name? Des's mum.
Oh, Des's mum, Eileen.
Eileen's been away, hasn't she, with George for a while. Imagine during that time her unit's been flooded, and all the topsoil and everything that wasn't used on that woman who lost Shane in the shed's garden has somehow gone into her unit, and it's destroyed her favourite rug that she's had since Des used to be as a baby, crawling on it and playing with his toy cars. And meanwhile, cats have also got in and peed on it, and also a heavy smoker, I don't know, popped in as part of the flood brigade and smoked on it. Okay, just imagine all those things have happened, and slugs. Any of these amazing rug cleaning people can taste it. I've watched so many of them. I can tell which company it is just from which boots they're wearing. Like, I'm just saying.
We're not very well right now, guys. We're not okay.
It's a recommendation. If you're suffering from a mental health moment, just watch people cleaning rugs. It's very repetitive. And at the end, you see the before and after. And there you have the rug. Often a rug so ugly, you want to throw the mud back on it, but it is fascinating.
Just to be clear, this is not a euphemism. We are talking about actual rugs.
Literal rugs. And also people who breed snakes.
So a couple of other little details about the storyline.
I'm going back to Neighbours now.
Clive gives Des a bill for the courtship, which is funny.
Yeah.
And Shane finds out about the engagement and awkwardly shakes Daphne's hand like she's just got the promotion that they were both up for or something. It's a really weird scene. Was that meant to be with Des? That's the only way it makes sense. It would make sense if he shook Des's hand. Why is he shaking Daphne's hand like that?
I think it's like it's putting a bit of distance, isn't it, between him and Daphne. He doesn't want to kiss her in case he starts crying.
Maybe. Congratulations. Best of luck in the coming business year, etc. Kind regards.
Yours truly. Maybe secretly he actually wants to be with Des. That's the plot. If it was being made now, that would have been the plot, for sure.
Yeah, would have had a thruple.
At the very least.
Yeah.
The thruple storyline was weird, wasn't it? I'm just saying. I know that's modern Neighbours.
Yeah.
It was weird how they put it together, because none of them seemed convinced, really, that was a good idea.
They weren't really in a thruple. They were in sort of, I would say, like, parallel monogamish relationships.
Yeah.
Until they had the threesome. And then it got a bit thruppily.
Then it got sort of, But anyway, sidetracked.
Yes.
Do you think that we need to put a reminder, content warning, that this is a podcast that is delivered by two neurodivergent people under a lot of stress? Or do you think someone listening might have picked it up already?
Yeah, this is a shambles. I'm gonna edit this. we are all over the place. We're just like,
you better leave in my rug bit. That's all I'm saying.
I will not touch your rug, Rachel.
Thank
I promise.
You very much. Not without Scott asking me for permission first. Carry on, carry on, Sarah.
We're doing so well today. Jim, Zoe, and the baby. Oh, and young, sexy Deborah and Paul as a little side dish here. So Zoe comes back from the Blue Mountains.
Whatever that is.
And she keeps vomiting and fainting conspicuously until everyone and their dog is like, you're pregnant, mate.
So I've got a question for you. At what point did they do it? I don't remember them ever actually managing to get a night without Lucy.
We didn't see them do it.
I mean, thank God, because really, I mean, Madge and Fred was already like enough. And that was mainly just folding up clothes. But this morning sickness does seem to have come from an immaculate conception.
Yeah. I mean, look, Jim, you're a grown man. Wrap it up. Wrap it up. You are in your, 40s?
Hundreds.
Late 40s?
Impossible to know.
Not okay. I don't know. She was on the pill or whatever. But even so, diseases, wrap it up.
It was the thing about the pill. That was one of those information leaflet moments.
Yeah.
So even I know we haven't talked about it yet and I keep bringing it up, but even the business class, there's elements of it that are so dull and you just think, has someone sponsored this?
I can't even think about the business class. I just... Anyway, everyone works out Zoe is pregnant in a matter of seconds because she's like walking around being like, yeah. I'm pregnant. Andrea works it all out and is like, you can confide in me. I won't tell anyone.
For 10 seconds.
Zoe says she doesn't want Jim to know. In the meantime, Bradley has proposed to Lucy.
Yes.
To be fair, their relationship, this proposal is more well thought through and long term.
Oh my God.
Than all the adult engagements on Ramsay Street today.
Completely. More mature. More, they've got more in common. They respect each other. They keep their boundaries. You know, separate rooms. No one's going to get unexpectedly pregnant. I'm trying to think. What would that be? That combination, Bruce Lee, Lou Brad,
maybe
Brad
not.
Lou, whatever they are. I'm going to go for Brucey.
Brucey's better than Lou Brad.
I'm not good at this stuff. I ship Brucey as an engagement out of any engagement that's ever happened up to this point in Neighbours and quite a few subsequently.
Yeah. And it's actually very cute. And everyone else's reactions are very cute. Like, well, congratulations. When's the wedding? You know, everyone's playing along. Everyone understands the assignment except for Jim. When Bradley's like, may I have your daughter's hand in marriage? A normal parent would be like, sure you can. Why don't we have a little wedding in the garden?
Yeah.
And they would play along with the game,
yeah,
right?
We'll put a tablecloth on your head so you look like a bride. And we'll give you a bow tie and it will all be lovely. Yeah. And we'll have some fish fingers.
That's what should have happened.
Yep. Yeah.
What actually happened was like Jim was like, you shall not marry my daughter.
Well, Jim, you know, he's a great example of what relationships should be. But I did understand he was upset that they were trying to fix his late wife's ring so it would fit Lucy.
Yes.
But he really should have thought, isn't that actually quite meaningful for Lucy and quite sweet? And this is the moment for sensitivity. But as I've written about 10 times in this 4 sheets of paper, Jim is a terrible dad in every way.
This would not have happened as well if he had just played along with they did that as an act of desperation because they weren't being heard in their plan to get married. If he had just played along, they would not have then had that like cockamamie plan resize the ring. And then Jim physically assaults Bradley, who, by the way, he jokes about booking the honeymoon suite. Sir, gross. Lucy is what, 10? Stop it.
I mean, even if she was 14, it would still be grim.
It's a really, really gross thing to say about your 10-year-old daughter. Stop it.
Mm.
So, yeah, Jim reacts like a psychopath to the whole thing. And then when I understand his emotional reaction to the destroying of the ring, he grabs Bradley by the ear and it's open season on Bradley, physically assaulting Bradley this fortnight. It's very disturbing. Andrea yells at him and immediately is like, and you got Zoe pregnant.
Yeah.
She's known for 2 minutes.
Literally 2 minutes. I mean, it's how to spread the word. But maybe there's a level at which Zoe wanted him to know.
Oh, she probably did. Otherwise, she wouldn't have told everyone. But yeah, that's not Andrea's call to make.
No. And then it leads to some really, I mean, I don't know what to say about these conversations, really misogynistic conversations about how she cannot bring up a child on her own and they have to get married. Now, I think part of that might be true because Zoe, I don't know how conscientious a parent she would be, but that doesn't mean she can't. And also, that doesn't equal you have to be married to the most boring, terrible father in the whole world, Jim.
Yeah, he's like, I own this child and woman now. And he conducts himself with all the finesse of a child bashing its fist on a supermarket floor, yelling, I want it, I want it, I want it.
And they're very romantic. Let's just make the best of it.
Yeah. Everyone, including Jim's horrible misogynistic sons, are like, you're a scumbag. Leave her alone. Stop harassing her.
Scott still manages to do it in a whiny way. Like, he's completely right about Jim's hypocrisy, but he still manages to do it like that.
Well, at least Zoe consented to the sexual activity.
As far as we know.
Scott. Like, Scott still doesn't understand. He's like, oh, you know, you criticised me and Lenny and it was all about pregnancy. No, it was about you pressuring her for sex.
Yeah, absolutely.
Little Glenn. Shit.
It does seem to have changed his perspective on how he treats women, or so he says. Yeah. Anyway, you know, he says to Madge, Mrs. Mitchell, I know I haven't given you much reason to trust me alone with Lenny. Not much reason, no, to trust him alone with Lenny or really any other female person. But he's like, at least I know how to treat her. And I've looked, do you know what I wrote then in capitals? Scott's mullet. I just wrote, because I know this is, I'm a bit conscious of hair at the moment, but Scott's mullet, and what actually I think needs to happen is the bottom of Scott's hair trimmed, then added to Tom's fringe, and then between them they have one normal haircut.
So Jim now is basically, he just will not leave her alone.
No, he's harassing her.
And also, given that everybody now knows about the baby, would you not go home and tell your small child who was really worried that you would have another baby and replace them before someone else did?
Yeah, apparently not.
No, he goes to the pub.
I mean, on the other hand, I think there's a lot of, I don't want to say men, let's say hashtag some men, that is not an uncommon response to a surprise pregnancy announcement.
But like, his priority should be like, oh my God, Bradley knows, so it's only a matter of time before someone tells Lucy. He doesn't even think about Lucy.
I mean, that's not news.
No. And then Bradley does tell Lucy, and Lucy doesn't believe him, and they have a fight, and then Bradley says she's too ugly to marry anyway.
Which is like an appropriately horrible thing that an 11-year-old boy would say.
Yeah.
They are written as kids, which is quite nice.
Bradley gets a pass because he's a child.
But they have a big argument, a big falling out over this, because Lucy would surely think that she would have known about it if it was true. But Bradley's quite rightly disgruntled, I would say.
Yeah. I would say, you know, if I was, I don't know, an adult in that situation, I would have a quiet word and be like, you don't call someone ugly just because you're upset with them. Mm. But he doesn't have any responsible adults around him, so that's not going to happen.
No, absolutely. And also, just bear in mind, he's so damaged that he got beaten up by a guy and then told his mum she should marry him. So I think he's in a vulnerable, fragile state.
Oh, it's so fucking sad. Paul is clearly in love with Zoe, and like, he's sort of running around after her this entire block of episodes, gatekeeping her and Jim. Someone has to. Mm. But he takes her to a secluded house with no phone to get away from Jim. What could go wrong? Meanwhile, young, sexy Deborah moves into Paul's office, and the whole Fortnite is corporate espionaging him in the most obvious way, and Paul doesn't notice because he's not that bright, apparently.
She should have just got him to dry her back. You know, that's
dry my back.
That's what works. I mean, she's a horrible character as well. They sort of deserve each other. I feel like Deborah and Paul would be, they could have really turned Lazarus around.
Yeah.
What do you call it? A power couple.
They would have been the power couple that we never had. But yeah, I don't think she's going to be around much longer. She has walk-on part energy.
Mm.
I'm surprised she's been around this long, to be honest. So Zoe falls over in pain on her own in the house without a phone.
I mean, Paul might have known what was going on if he hadn't gone to the cafe to have two fried eggs, some toast and some coffee, which he could have easily had in his home made by his grandma. Just passing comment. That sort of annoys me when people on TV and in real life. I mean, obviously, I work a lot in coffee shops. I can have coffee at home, but I'm using other facilities of the space. But something like you go 5 minutes away from your own home to have the breakfast that your nan makes. That was weird. Sorry, carry on.
I don't know. Give Helen a break. You know, I think, you know, give her some time off.
I'm maybe sure that was.
And also, he doesn't live at home anymore. He lives at Lassiter's.
Well, he seems to be eating all his meals at home.
Yeah.
He exists at Lassiter's, but he lives at home.
I don't know. Sometimes it's nice to have a meal out, and also it's nice to support local business.
Right, I take it back.
That's a I'm going to defend Paul's breakfast here as a regular orderer in of breakfast from local establishments that I could make at home but don't want to.
Fair enough.
Oh, I fancy some pancakes.
Okay, but pancakes is like a hassle to make. Toast.
Yeah. It's a great little local cafe that does some really nice pancakes. Anyway, Zoe falls over in pain. Paul goes to check on her, takes her to hospital. Zoe has an ectopic pregnancy and loses the baby. And the doctor, when Clive and Daphne show up, or Des and Daphne, who is that? Or is it, no, is it Paul and Daphne?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
So the doctor, Paul and Daphne show up. And what is with this doctor?
Yeah, the doctor says her chances of having another baby are greatly reduced. Do you want me to tell her?
That's your job.
And they're like,
"That's your whole job."
Oh, no, we'll tell her. Us yeah. non-medical professionals who are just her mates who've come to see her after this trauma. What a bizarre thing.
Why would you volunteer? I would be like, no, you as the medical professional, please tell her. And I will be there when you tell her to support her.
Yeah.
That's the right way round. Not I, as her friend, need to find the perfect words in this situation. And also, I want her to associate with me with delivering this life-altering news.
Yeah. Very weird. Very weird.
So, that, yeah, little shout out to Neighbours. That really is, we are seeing the original sin of the dark days of Peterborough Hospital. Mm. Really, truly, this doctor is not earning her.
It's a hotbed of inappropriateness.
Yeah. Just like, are you family? No. Well, I suppose you'll do. That's not how data protection works. That's not how patient confidentiality works. They need a class from Jean on data protection. So it is quite a sad scene with Daphne. At first, I wanted to slap Daphne when she was like, oh, but you're so ugly when you cry.
Yeah, I think she's just trying to be distracting. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I mean, it's terrible.
But then she does cry. And I think that does run the risk of making Zoe's problem about her. But I think that it is, the way that it happens between them is quite like, feels more like empathy and solidarity than it does Daphne making it about her. The way that it's performed, I think it's okay.
I think, I think the way it's performed is like it's two friends and they both care. But yeah. Also, I don't think it has quite sunk in yet for Zoe. And then when Jim comes to see her, despite being told quite clearly that she doesn't want to see him, but she's now trapped in a hospital bed, so she can't avoid him. And it's like he still wants to get back together, but she's finally grown up a bit and realises that he's terrible. She doesn't want to be with him.
Yeah, she's the emotionally mature one in that dynamic. He's the stomping baby.
Yeah.
Anyway, they break up for good. Thank God.
Thank God.
That's over. Phew. Last few little bits, Mike and Nikki. There's a plot where Lucy wins a date with a celebrity. I'm unclear what the celebrity does because I wasn't really paying attention.
He's a sportster of
okay,
some kind.
He's a sports, yeah, okay. I wasn't sure if sports or pop star or actor. Anyway, Nikki goes on the date because Lucy is a child.
Yeah.
So Lucy's like, celebrity man won't mind. If I'm a child, it's like, he's not like that. It's like, I hope he is like that.
Even if Lucy put on high heels and makeup, she would still look 11 years old.
Yeah, bless her. I think it's quite disturbing that it's framed as a date and that you have to be at least 16.
Yeah.
I'm very uncomfortable with this arrangement.
Well, it is very on brand.
Yeah. But anyway, what it really is a meet and greet with a PR person. And if they just called it that, then I would have been fine with it. And if they just called it that, that wouldn't have been a problem.
No.
It's just the framing of it as a date, which it's not. It's just a competition. But Nikki tells everyone that she's going on a date with this guy, which hurts Mike's feelings. We have Sue Parker for the first time with a terrible haircut.
Terrible haircut. And she's just grim. Sue.
Yeah.
She's horrible. And also there's Robin, who's... The thing is that Sue and Robin have appeared out of nowhere as friends of Lenny. And to me, it seems, unless I've missed them, as friends of Lenny and Nikki hanging in the playground, chatting. But it's as if they've been there all along and we know who they are. I don't know who you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Simpsons episode with Poochie where it's like, hi, Ray.
Yeah, so weird.
So this whole thing culminates in Mike's very upset with Nikki, and then Robin hits on Nikki, and then Mike fights Robin for Nikki's honor. And the reaction of the adults around them is the weirdest fucking thing.
Like, let them fight it out. Go on, it'll do them good.
Des is like, should we intervene? And Clive's like, no, let them kill each other. It's what's right. Mm. Why? What do you mean?
Also, side point, I hadn't really registered how Nikki is so much taller than Charlene. So much taller.
Yeah. Charlene's tiny.
I mean, really, teeny weeny.
I like how she stands up for Nikki the whole time, though. She's like, she's a loyal friend. I want Charlene in my corner.
The minute they sat at the dinner table, Nikki and celebrity sportster, I knew someone was going to take a photo for the newspaper. Like, what else was going to happen? It was definitely...
Well, that's the whole point of the competition.
It's also, they kept publicising Lucy meeting, is it Grant, the geezer? That he was going to lose it. And also, they kept saying, it was on TV all the time, Lucy Robinson, haha. And then also, where have I written it here? Nikki, like, whatever was her excuse about going to, you know, work with a friend from her old school, it was so elaborate. Like, the fact that Jim and Helen didn't guess she was lying is a terrible indictment of their awful parenting. And yeah, then later, why is Lucy awake? Oh, I must have been sleepwalking. I mean,
no further questions, Your Honour.
And then he's just like, oh, you better go back to bed by the time I count to five or whatever it is. This is, I mean, I could spot a lie in one of my kids a mile off.
Also, sleepwalking is quite dangerous. And if your child really is sleepwalking, then you need to be addressing that because she could walk outside and hurt herself.
Yes, I agree. It's so weird, but to believe those crap excuses, very poor.
He doesn't want to know. It's just an excuse to be a shoddy parent. Mm. Boo, Jim Robinson.
Boo.
What else happens? Mrs. Mangle moves into the street, tries to get free medical advice from Clive, who, to get rid of her, pretends he's going to sexually assault her. Ha 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 ha.
Default setting. Also, is there only one removal company in the whole of Erinsborough?
Yeah, is that the same guy from it last time?
It's the comedy removal people.
Yeah, Mrs. Mangle moves in. I don't have the end. Yeah, is she British?
No, she's just posh. Like, you know when people from Edinburgh sound English because it's just how they're posh?
I've written bloody business seminar, and then I just written make it stop.
The business seminar. I've got a lot of things I'm bored with this month, right? I've put, I'm bored with Jim and Lucy's jigsaw. I'm bored with Home James. I'm bored with the business lessons. Those are the things that I'm bored with. And yeah, like, there's too much actual business conversation. It's a soap opera. I don't know. I just thought it was so bizarre. But it was just to highlight, I suppose, Tom and his weird hair and his playing up. You know what I wrote, actually, and this is my observation, and sometimes, you know, I'm famed for my observations in this group, but something that Tom and Max have in common, right, they're brothers, they're both a bit inappropriate with the females in their lives, etc., but the thing they have in common that's fascinating is they both fancy teachers. Like, that is their thing.
That's true.
Also, in the
maybe
business,
their mum was a teacher.
Maybe. Oh, nothing would surprise me less. And actually, maybe she was, because how did he speak all the languages? Oh, no, he lived in France or something.
No, his Maria's dad,
who I think
was Czech.
Taught him French.
Yeah.
Oh, no, silly me. Also, for the business lesson, that first one, Tom and Shane are both sitting on the arms of the couches, but there are two spare seats still on the couch. And I found that excruciating for some reason. I couldn't bear it. The couches are like a corner, aren't they, in Clive's house. And why didn't they all just sit on the seats? Why are they sitting on the arms of the chair?
Shane immediately puts his feet up on the sofa and Madge tells him off, rightly so.
Yeah.
What kind of animal puts their feet up on someone else's furniture?
So many things wrong with the business classes. But also, obviously, you've got this very clear, tragic tale of Jean coming. And it's terrible because I quite like Jean, but I'm not interested in her tragic tale. Does that make me a bad person?
I'm not interested in anything about Jean or these business classes. Like, even talking about it is like, you can hear I'm slowly running out of batteries. Like, the air is just deflating out of my lungs. Just gonna lie on the floor and stop moving.
Yeah, fair. All right, let's stop talking about business classes.
Sad old lady is the last thing I've written. Random sad old lady storyline. Okay. Mrs. York keeps showing up just to fall over a lot and eat stale food. Aww. She doesn't have money, but she's pretending to have money. I don't know who she is. I'm very sorry for her, but I don't know who she is, and I don't know why this is happening to me.
So she used to be wealthy. She was famous for being wealthy. And then clearly she's fallen on hard times, but no one's picking up the fact that she's collecting. Imagine my little fingers doing quote marks, scraps, stale scraps for the birds and animals of Erinsborough. And actually, I thought, and then there's a moment with Mrs. York, Mrs. Mangle and Madge chatting. They're not contemporaries. Madge is like 20 years younger than them. I found that annoying. Like, don't lump her with them just because she cooks. But
the final bit
was honestly, that's been the saddest ending. When you think about the sort of the deaths, the sexual assaults, you know, all the different things that have happened in the like last moments of episodes of Neighbours. To me, seeing Mrs. York say to her dog, "Some for you, some for me," was like beautiful writing and tragic.
I just don't know why I'm seeing it, because I don't know her.
York, what's wrong with you? She's been in that at least two episodes. We don't know her. I don't remember actually from first time rounds whether she becomes in any way relevant. But I thought that was, you know, when you think about the Tories.
Yeah, it's very sad.
It is very sad.
I'm not disputing it. I just don't know why I have to be sad for this old lady. I don't know. Anyway, I've just one more stray observation before I'm sure we get into a lot of very interesting stray observations from you. Phrases nobody uses ever in real life that people keep using here. Terrific.
Terrific is said much too often. I think I've even said that before in this podcast.
Yes. Sex maniac.
I mean, it's deeply relevant.
It's not a thing I've ever heard anyone say outside of Ramsey Street in 1986. Mental midget.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone say that.
I'm not okay with, for many reasons. And stress freak.
Stress freak, I think, was of its time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to note those
as a thing. Yeah, the other three I'm with you, but yeah. Weird. What a weird thing to watch and discuss. I have a list of a few random things I noticed.
Excellent. Shoot.
The first one is Nikki watching the Iron Man show that I want to say Brett, the hunk, is on. She's holding a pillow with googly eyes. And the googly eyes are exactly where her nips would be. And I found that hilarious.
That's my party trick.
So, yeah, if you want a bit of a giggle, go to episode 271 and look at Nikki holding a pillow watching Iron Man with two sets of eyes. That was my first observation.
Perfect.
My second one is Bradley. There's a few things that are really, like, interesting in terms of what happens subsequently in the Neighbours canon. Bradley calls Jack money bags.
Oh,
I thought
the original money bags.
That was very interesting.
The original bags.
Yeah, so maybe money bags is really a title that belongs to whoever owns Lassiter's.
Yeah, that's the job title.
The job title is money bags. Who's the current money bags of Lassiter's? Well, currently, it's anyway. There's a lot of romantic music at really non-romantic moments. Bradley and Andrea's conversation about Jack Lassiter, and which I think Daphne then chimes in with, or whoever. I remember there's a conversation about it anyway. Happens while Andrea's hanging up dry washing to dry on the line. And that's one of those things, like I think we've mentioned before, people carrying empty boxes or drinking out of empty cups. It's not difficult. Put some water in the cup. It helps the actor. But hanging up dry washing, I found deeply annoying. Jean, the business teacher, has a unit in Bedford Street. I wonder if people who've got units know each other. I don't know. Daphne has a really weird work apron, like people who look after elderly people in homes. And that, no disrespect to that very important job, but if I was running my own cafe, I don't know, it's like a bib apron. It was really weird. Anyway, that threw me a bit. Who looks after the bar when Andrea and Jack go out on their dates?
Good question.
Clive is staring at the sandwich that Bradley doesn't eat. It looks like the most amazing salt beef sandwich ever. Like, it looked delicious. It really made me think of salt beef sandwiches. I've got to go somewhere today that's quite near Reuben's in Baker Street. And ever since I watched that episode on Saturday night, I've been thinking, I could get a salt beef sandwich today. I could get one.
You could.
I know.
You could get Bradley's leftover sandwich. No one else wants it.
No, this is true. Well, and doesn't Clive ate it?
That's such a weird thing to do as a business owner. Like, I'm shutting up shop. Do you want this child's leftover sandwich?
Why not? It does look like the best. Also, why is she selling salt beef sandwiches? Like, why is that a thing? I don't
know. She's Jewish.
I mean, that'd be a great plot twist. It would explain... I was going to say it would explain the hair, but I don't know what I mean by that. Okay, Nikki comes to apologise to Mike, who's looking at the paper, and he tells her to rack off. Is that the first rack off of Neighbours?
I think it might be.
Tom says the expression I really like, what a load of horse feathers, which I think is one I'm going to adopt and use. Okay, here is my... ultimate. So we've got money bags, we've got rack off, but here is my, I don't even know, I feel like find some fanfare music or something, because this is quite major. And I'm talking episode 279 at 5 minutes 55 seconds, right? This is where you're going to find this absolute moment in time. Kylie/Charlene says, I should be so lucky.
I didn't clock that.
Yep. Yep. It's about babysitting Bradley and him being sent to bed or whatever it is. And she goes, I should be so lucky. And I was like, did I just hear correctly? And I rewound it about, 487 times.
Whoa.
There you go. Episode 279, 5 minutes, 55 seconds. Charlene, I should be so lucky. There you go.
What year did that song come out?
I don't know.
87.
Well, there you go. Maybe that was what inspired it.
Maybe. Wow. Well,
I mean, really, what a moment.
Yeah. My mind is blown. That's just blown my tiny mind.
It did. I've been so excited to tell you. I've been keeping it. I wrote it in big
you
letters.
You kept that one in your back pocket the whole time.
I put it in massive letters and put asterisks around it so I didn't forget to leave it to the last.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. Who are we kicking out this week?
I'm going to get you if you don't leave Aaron's bar now. Who?
I mean, how many are we allowed to do?
Well, let's stick to one each. Otherwise, it just gets out of control. Are we going to have to call the comedy removal people?
Right. I'm going to kick out the doctor at Erinsborough Hospital who wanted Daphne to pass on sad medical information to her friend. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like if we're going to talk about Ramsey Street residents, there'd have to be like a pack of people. I can't really pick one. And also, I feel like default setting gym should be like a pass for every week. But yeah, doctor with poor doctoring is going for me.
I think that's reasonable. Oh, I'm torn between Jim and Jack Lasseter.
I mean, they're terrible people.
I'm going to say Jim because Jack's going to leave with Bradley and then we can't even keep an eye on him.
That's the worst.
Grim, grim, grim. Well, it's been a journey. Let us know what you thought about this block of episodes in our private Facebook group, Leaving Erinsborough, or follow us on Instagram, Leaving Erinsborough. If you want to join our Facebook group, you just have to agree to the rules. If you don't, I will decline it and you will have to try again. Please do not be deterred. It's not a personal rejection. I just have to make sure that people agree not to be dicks to each other. And... yeah, exciting times.
I'm absolutely exhausted now, by the way, from this emotional journey.
Me too. Hopefully next time we'll be in a more cheerful state. Maybe something nice will happen in the world.
Yeah, who's going to get engaged next? Maybe like Jean and Eileen and they could knock through their units.
Yeah.
That's not a euphemism.
And we don't even have to give them a couple name because they already rhyme.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Igene.
Sounds like a futuristic movie I don't want to watch. And we'll see you all next time.
Goodbye.
Leaving Erinsborough was hosted by Sarah Gibbs and Rachel Krieger. This episode was edited by Sarah Gibbs. Our logo is by Hayley Charlesworth. Our theme song was mixed by Graham Rawson. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review wherever you get podcasts. Join us next time when we'll be covering episodes 281 to 290.